I've...
Esterhazy shook his head.
Are you absolutely sure of that?
I'm sure,
Esterhazy choked out.
He went down. I'm so sorry, he suddenly wailed. I've killed my brother-in-law.
He began rocking back and forth, head in his hands.
God forgive me.
A stunned silence.
He's out of his head, the gamekeeper muttered. As clear a case of more fever as I've ever seen.
Get these people out of here, Crawlmarty rumbled, gesturing at the guests.
He turned to the gamekeeper.
Robbie, call the police.
He swung on Esterhazy.
Is that the rifle you shot him with?
He gestured roughly at the rifle Esterhazy had carried in, now lying on the floor. He nodded miserably.
Nobody touch it.
The guests left in murmuring groups, speaking in hushed tones, shaking their heads. The lightning flashed, a boom of thunder following. Rain lashed the windows. Esterhazy sat in the chair, slowly lowering his hands from his face, feeling the welcome warmth of the fire creeping through his wet clothing. An equally marvelous warmth crept into his inner being, slowly displacing the horror. He felt a sense of release washing over him, even elation. It was over, over, over. He had nothing more to fear from Pendergast. The genie was back in the bottle. The man was dead. As for his partner DeGusta and that other New York City cop, Hayward, killing Pendergast had cut the head off the snake. This was truly the end. And by all appearances, these Scottish dunces were buying the story. There was nothing that could come to light to contradict anything he'd said. He had gone back, collected all the shells, except the one he wanted them to find. Pendergast's rifle and the shells from their fight he had deposited in a bog on his way back, and they'd never find that. That would be the only mystery, the missing rifle. Nothing strange in that. A rifle could easily get permanently lost once sunk in the mire. They knew nothing about his handgun, and Esterhazy had made that disappear as well. The stag's tracks, if they survived the storm, would be fully consistent with his story.
Bloody hell,
muttered Crawlmarty, going to the mantelpiece, grabbing a bottle of scotch and pouring himself a tumbler full. He drank it in small gulps, pacing before the fire, ignoring Esterhazy. Grant came back in.
The police are on their way from Inverness, sir, along with a Northern Constabulary Special Services team with grapnels.
Crawlmarty turned, downed the glass, poured himself another, and glared at Esterhazy.
You stay put till they get here, you bloody damned fool.
Another peal of thunder shook the old stone lodge, and the wind howled across the moors. Chapter 6. The police arrived more than an hour later, their flashing lights striping the gravel drive. The storm had passed, leaving a leaden sky of swift-moving clouds. They were dressed up in blue slickers, boots, and waterproof hats, tramping across the stone entryway, looking self-important. Esterhazy watched them from the chair, reassured by their unimaginative stolidity. The last one to enter was the man in charge, and the only one not in uniform. Esterhazy examined him surreptitiously. He was at least 6'5", bald, with a fringe of pale hair. He had a narrow face and blade-thin nose, and carried himself tilted forward, as if cutting his way through life. His nose was just red enough to compromise the appearance of seriousness, and he occasionally dabbed at it with a handkerchief. He was dressed in old shooting clothes, tin-oil pants, a tight twill sweater, and a scuffed barber jacket unzipped.
Hello, Crawlmarty, he said, extending an easy hand as Crawlmarty bustled over.
They huddled at the far end of the hall, speaking in low tones, occasionally glancing in Esterhazy's direction. Then the officer came over and took the wing chair next to Esterhazy.
Chief Inspector Balfour of the Northern Constabulary, he said quietly, not offering his hand, but leaning forward, elbows on his knees. And you are Judson Esterhazy?
That's right.
He slipped out a small steno pad. All right, Dr. Esterhazy, tell me what happened. Esterhazy went through the story from beginning to end, pausing frequently to collect himself or choke back tears, while Balfour took notes. When he was done, Balfour shut the pad. We're going to the scene of the accident. You're coming with us.
I'm not sure, Esterhazy swallowed, that I'm up to it.
I'm quite sure you are, said Balfour crisply. We've two bloodhounds, and Mr. Grant will be coming with us as well. He knows the byways of the mire. He stood up, consulting a large marine watch. We've 5 hours of daylight left. Esterhazy got up with a long, mournful face and a show of reluctance. Outside, the team was gearing up with packs, ropes, and other equipment. At the end of the gravel drive, a dog handler was exercising 2 leashed bloodhounds around the greensward. An hour later, they had tramped over the side of Bain Durg and arrived at the edge of the Foulmire, the boggy ground marked by a ragged line of boulders. A mist lay over the moors. The sun was already sinking in the sky, the endless landscape disappearing into grey nothingness, the dark pools lying motionless in the heavy air. There was a faint smell of vegetal decay. Dr. Esterhazy, Balfour looked at him, frowning, arms folded over his chest. Which way? Esterhazy glanced around, his face a blank.
It all looks the same.
No point in giving them too much help. Balfour shook his head sadly.
The dogs have a scent over here, Inspector.
The thick brogue of the gamekeeper drifted through the mist.
And I see a bit of sign.
Is that where you went into the mire? Balfour asked.
I think so.
All right, the dogs will lead the way. Mr. Grant, you stay with them up front. The rest of you follow. Dr. Esterhazy and I will come last. Mr. Grant knows the good ground. Follow in his footsteps at all times. The inspector took a moment to remove a pipe which had been pre-packed and lit it. If anyone gets mired, don't the rest of you rush in like damn fools and get mired yourself. The team has ropes and lifesaver rings and telescoping hooks for retrieving any who gets stuck in quicksand. He puffed away, looking around. Mr. Grant, do you have anything to add?
I do,
said the small, wizened man, leaning on his walking stick, his voice almost as high as a girl's.
If you do get caught in it, don't struggle.